Normally at this time we are into Gary Myers' afternoon show, and he's off today because we've got a Blackhawks game. The schedule starts now. So at 1:50 we'll hand that off to Judd Surratt for the pregame, and then Troy and John will take the actual puck drop at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Monday, as you know, and I think as was just mentioned, is the federal holiday, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The I Have a Dream speech, Selma, the movement, the violence, the old black and white film images we have about the man and his times. But let's put a little flesh and blood on those images. Dr. Claiborne Carson is a professor at Stanford. He founded and runs the Martin Luther King Jr. Research and Education Institute at the school. He's written a number of books, including Martin's Dream, My Journey, and the Legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. Good to have you aboard with us, sir. And may I say, I've just received your book, and I look forward to reading it.
Well, I hope you're not the only one who's going to be reading it. I put a lot of work into trying to tell about the last 50 years, what has happened since I attended the March on Washington in 1963 as a 19-year-old. And obviously, much of what we think about King today is based on the legacy that happened of the time after his death when people had to make decisions about what was worth remembering about his life.
Well, that brings up the point. Your life is so rich and diverse, and there's so much I'd like to talk about with you. We have our memories shaped, in history. There's a mythologizing that tends to go on over time. But is there something that we should know about the man? Is there something that we don't know that should be remembered most about him? And what was it about him to you, the symbol of the American Civil Rights Movement, that goes beyond just the history of the book images that most of us hold in thought?
I think the major thing that has become more clear to me since I saw him as a 19-year-old is the extent to which he's a visionary. While most of us were thinking about the march as an effort to get a civil rights legislation passed, I think he was thinking past that already. He was thinking of how do you realize the ideal of that was expressed in the Declaration of Independence about the universal equality of all people. That's an ideal we still haven't achieved today, and he didn't even mention the civil rights legislation that the Kennedy administration was trying to get accomplished. So I think I see him now carrying on a dialogue with Thomas Jefferson at the march about when are we going to live up to those ideals that he expressed in the Declaration of Independence.
Chicago figured prominently in his life story. He came here a number of times, particularly, I think it was 1966, when he stepped up to and tried to break down the entrenched segregation and racism that operated in the city in Chicago with housing, with the schools, with firefighters and police officers, and within city government.
Yes, I think that demonstrates that he was much more than simply a black civil rights leader. He was, if that had been his main role, he would have retired after the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. But instead, he does go to Chicago and works on a much broader agenda that's not just having to do with segregation and discrimination, but with issues, economic issues. He moves his family into a ghetto. And, of course, he ends his life working with sanitation workers in Memphis organizing the Poor People's Campaign.
When he was here, he lived on the West Side. He marched into all-white neighborhoods, and he did get a dialogue going. I think they called it a summit. There were educators and business people and civil rights people, and real estate people were all there. And Richard J. Daley, it sounded like he had come to an agreement, but he never lived up to whatever promise that he had made to have more fair housing in the city.
It was certainly the case that King did not achieve all he wanted to achieve in Chicago. I think that he realized, perhaps even before going there, that this was going to be the most difficult struggle of his life. I think in some respects, getting civil rights legislation was easy compared to dealing with the issues that we're still dealing with today. We haven't solved the problem of poverty. We haven't solved the problem of the wide gulf between rich and poor, and all the barriers to economic opportunity, including poor educational opportunities. So I think that he showed us that he wasn't afraid to confront those problems, even when he understood how difficult it would be to solve them.
Do we need then somebody with his stature today to continue to carry the torch forward? Because there is racism today still, not just in pockets around this country, but it is, you know, in the city of Chicago. Many feel because we still have most of the crime being committed by and to poor black citizens of the city, that it's an example of living, perhaps, latent racism.
Well, I think we do have people who are confronting those problems. It's not like the movement has gone away. I don't think of the movement as something just in the past. I think that many people are carrying on that struggle today, but they just don't get as much attention. They're not part of a movement that, you know, one of the things that distinguished the civil rights struggle is that I think many Americans of all races recognize that the Southern Jim Crow system was wrong. I don't think we have that same extent of agreement about the causes of the economic problems of today or the solutions to them. So it's much more difficult to organize a movement that's going to draw a quarter of a million people to the National Mall as the civil rights struggle did. That was the heroic period of the movement.
I think in part, too, it might be because a lot of people, maybe whites in this country, feel, well, the battle is over. We have equality today. They don't see the contrast as stark as it was not too many decades ago.
And I think that's true for black Americans. I think that there's less of a sense of urgency. I think the fact that Jim Crow affected all African Americans to the extent that even those who didn't live in the South knew that they couldn't travel freely in a region of this country. They couldn't be certain when they went to a motel or a restaurant and whether they would be accepted. So I think there was a sense of investment of all Americans, but we don't feel that same sense of investment about issues like poverty. If you're not poor, it's easy to just kind of put that out of your mind, you know, that this does not affect you. Mm-hmm. Now, I think some of us have had a reminder that we're only one missed paycheck away from poverty, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years. So perhaps some of that sense of urgency about these issues has come back. But I think we still need a lot more. I think we need to be able to put pressure on the president and the Congress to deal with these issues.
I'm holding your book, and the picture was taken from the Lincoln Memorial looking back toward the Washington Monument. Now, you were on the Freedom March. Were you in the crowd somewhere here?
Oh, I was there. I've been trying to find myself in one of those pictures. I didn't even have the sense to bring a Brownie camera from those days.
A Kodak Brownie, too. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Claiborne Carson. His book, I'll read you the whole title. It's My Journey and the Legacy of Martin Luther King Jr., a memoir. It's called Martin's Dream by Claiborne. You can call him Clay if you meet him on the street, Claiborne Carson. Doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you.